Minnesota Reads is a feature on Northland Morning featuring Minnesota authors talking about their work. This morning, we welcome Thomas Misa. He's written a book called Digital State, the story of Minnesota's computing industry. Thomas, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Tell us why the history of computing is so important and what the man on the street needs to know about the history of computing in our state.
Well, Minnesota for maybe 30 or 40 years was the center of the country's computing industry. It's a little bit hard to see that now, but from the late 40s through the 50s, 60s, into the 70s, maybe even into the 80s, this was Silicon Valley. We weren't called Silicon Valley because we didn't have the right publicity behind us, but this was the place where the computing industry was very focused and very concentrated. A lot of people had jobs, a lot of people made a lot of money, a lot of people had good careers for 30 or 40 years. Not forever, but for a long time.
So why this impressive computer boom in Minnesota, of all places? I know one of the things that you did mention in your book is that people found our temperate climate very welcoming.
In an era before air conditioning, that was exactly the case. When air conditioning kicked in, places like Houston looked a little bit less daunting. No, it's funny. In fact, it's one of the clues, I think, to why we need to pay attention to the computer industry today. The industry came here almost by accident in 1946. There was a government lab in Washington that got moved here, but it landed in exactly the right place. This is in St. Paul in an old radiator shop nearby Snelling and University on Minnehaha Avenue. And it was a little unlikely, but that region was a very rich region with lots and lots of skilled workers, people who knew how to run lathes, knew how to work electric motors, and from the university, knew how to do vacuum tubes and digital signals. So it could have landed in some other place, but St. Paul, it turns out, was a very rich industrial resource. So the industry, instead of just being a one-shot government lab, ended up turning into a big place. So that company, the Engineering Research Associates, that's founded in 1946, spawned the UNIVAC company and also in 1957 Control Data. Both of those employed tens of thousands of people in this state, and they grew in part because of this very rich industrial resource. Well, the same thing exists today. Industries don't grow in the middle of a desert. Industries grow when people can combine different local resources that are right at hand. Sometimes they're hard to see, and then create something that's new for the future. And that's one of the reasons that understanding the history of the state and its experience with computing is really important for people today.
You write that Minnesota's computer industry transformed the state's economy and identity. Talk about that a little bit and also touch again on why nobody knew about it.
Yeah, well, there's two parts to that. The state had a huge profile. The state wasn't big. You know, Minnesota isn't a huge state in terms of population, except for iron ore and rich farmland. We don't have rich natural resources right at hand, but we have lots of good people resources. So we had something like 2 or 3% of the nation's population. We aren't a huge state, but we had around 1970, 17% of the nation's computer manufacturing workforce. So we had a huge, huge, huge profile here built up from the pieces that I talked about before. So the reason why it was hard to see, I think, you know, today Silicon Valley is just awash with people who do great publicity, Intel Inside and everything else. We hear all the latest things because there's a publicity machine that keeps that full of the news. And here, a lot of the companies, including UNIVAC, including Control Data, Honeywell was a big military contractor too, even IBM in Rochester, another one of the important Minnesota sites. A lot of the companies ended up doing their most significant technical work for the government. Some of it was classified, much of it was classified. And the people who were working on those projects could talk to their coworkers, but could not talk to their spouses, to their families, to their communities, to their churches, to people in the state, in the cities where they were living, in the towns where they were living. So it was hard for the people outside the industry to see the full impact because much of it was classified. And that's at least one consideration why the Minnesota industry was so big, so prominent, but hard to see.
Talk a little bit about the roles of computing technology in wartime. As long as you're talking about some of the secrets and some of the government work, I hadn't realized that so much, that there was such a strong connection between computing technology and things that folks needed in war.
Yeah, well, this was one of the things. It was, on the one hand, it was cryptography, code making, and code breaking. That was the specific focus of this government lab in Washington that was transferred here in 1947. Another important government technology was radar. Prior to that, prior to World War II, when people talked about electronics, it was the electronics of waves, you know, like old-time radio. And with radar, you had the electronics of pulses, little ones and zeros. And the ones and zeros that people learned to route during wartime for radar, that was exactly the same type of circuits that people needed in the 40s and 50s to build the first generation of digital computers that did not only code making and code breaking and radar, but many, many other things as well, and created the whole information technology that we have today.
Thomas, another thing I was struck with was the importance of the University of Minnesota's role. And can you talk just briefly about the U of M's role in computing technology through the years?
Well, somebody said that it was almost half the class, so I think it was the electrical engineering class of 1943, ended up going to work for ERA and then becoming one of the mainstays of the engineering and workforce there. Seymour Cray had two different degrees from the university. Cray is, of course, probably the most famous of the computer designers. He had a degree in EE and also a master's degree in applied math. So the university played a very important role in terms of the high-skill, high-talent engineering workforce that then the companies were able to build on. So the engineering role there was very prominent and very important.
Well, Thomas, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. This was a fascinating conversation. Thomas Misa, our guest, he wrote a book called Digital State, the story of Minnesota's computing industry. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.